Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Keertana Tiwari, and you're listening to Simply Save, our personal finance podcast from Money Control. Continuing our series of podcasts that give you a year-end wrap-up of what happened in the world of business and finance in 2019, this is our second money podcast that looks at how 2019 affected your money and finances. Last week, we gave you the wrap-up on mutual funds. Today, let's talk about what happened in the world of banking and how your money got affected by it. I have with me our personal finance editor, Kezad Adijania, to give us the details. Hi, Kezad.
Hi, Kirtana.
So, Kezad, one of the biggest changes that took place in this year is on loans. And RBI said that the banks would now need to come up with loans linked to external benchmarks like the repo rate. And now we've also seen banks having come up with repo rate linked loans. Can you tell us about this?
Sure, Kirtana. So, what used to happen was that, banks used to give loans. We used to borrow money at that particular rate. Now, In floating rate loans, what happens, which is where your maximum home loans get bunched up under the floating rate loans. So what used to happen was that earlier banks used to fix rates under a mechanism called the marginal cost lending rate, MCLR. So of course the MCLR framework, even before MCLR, there used to be other frameworks like prime lending rate and benchmark prime lending rate and all of that. But just to give you a snapshot, the MCLR mechanism was the earlier way of fixing the interest rate. So there used to be marginal cost of funds. They used to calculate marginal cost of funds, the banks, and based on that, they used to peg your interest rate. So obviously, what is the underlying definition of a rather rational of a floating rate loan? If interest rates in the economy go up, your loan rates are supposed to go up. If the interest rates in the economy used to go down, your loan rates are also supposed to go down, right? It's not a fixed rate loan. It's a floating rate loan. Now, the benefit is supposed to accrue to you, the borrower, if, let's say, the interest rates in the economy go down. But what used to happen earlier was that when interest rates used to go up, your loan rates used to go up. But when interest rates used to come down in the economy, your loan rates never used to come down, did not used to come down as swiftly as it should have. This was observed by many industry experts, was taken up by many industry experts. RBI also took cognizance of it. It has been observing this. And it had been pushing banks to sort of transmit the cut in interest rates, the benefit of that to the consumers, but it never, to borrowers rather, but it did not happen as swiftly as RBI would have liked it. Which is why now RBI said, don't use your own internal benchmark, use an external benchmark, so that people know that when the external benchmark goes down, their loan rates are also supposed to go down. When the external benchmark goes up, the loan rate is supposed to go down, because MCLR and BPLR and all those intern, those are all internal benchmarks. Now you and I as a bank customer would not know what is my bank's MCLR or BPLR and how frequently does it move, whether it should, how much should it move if, let's say, there's a cut in the interest rates by the RBI. So the your whole way of fixing the loan rate has now become more transparent. So that's what happened basically this year. Repo rate is an external benchmark. So you link your home loan rate to repo rate. So there is some kind of charge or some kind of a markup that the bank fixes to the over and above the repo rate. And then depending on, then the bank also sees your credit behavior. And if that credit behavior is good, then there is a small markup. If your credit behavior or a credit score is bad, then there is a higher markup. And then what the final rate that you get is the rate at which you get to borrow your money from the bank.
In our previous market podcast episodes, once Santosh mentioned that the repo rate would take time to act upon banks.
This will happen almost immediately. Earlier, what used to happen was that MCLR used to take its own sweet time to trickle down, because they used to have a reset clause. So some banks used to have a 1 year reset clause. Some banks used to have a 6 month reset clause. So suppose if you take a loan from a bank in, let's say, in the month of June, you had taken an MCLR linked home loan in June with a 1 year reset clause. But suppose in the month of July, immediately the next month, if the rates go down, if the interest rates in the economy go down, your MCLR rate for you will not go down immediately. Why? Because there is a reset clause of 1 year. So you have to wait till next year's June for the effect to take place, the interest rate cut effect to take place. But in a repo rate loan, it will happen pretty soon. Because it is, if the repo rate goes down, that day, then your home loan rate has to go down immediately after that.
So will this have any effect on our economy?
It will basically be a lot more transparent.
Okay.
You know, people would know that this is the, you know, there's a cut in the interest rates or there is a hike in the interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
So my EMIs, the equated monthly installments that I pay every month to the bank, would need to change accordingly.
Okay.
So at least the benefits of a rate cut would be passed on to you, because in the last 1 year, we've seen so many rate cuts, right?
Yes.
So if this regime would have been there last year, then you would have already seen your EMIs coming down marginally, if not by a lot. But of course, one thing is that consumers need to, borrowers rather, need to be a little bit more cautious.
Okay.
Because if there is an interest rate cut, your EMI and your loan rate will also come down.
Okay.
But if interest rates go up, and they do go up, right? Because they move in a cycle, then your EMIs can also go up.
Okay.
So you need to do your financial planning a little carefully. And need to ensure that, you know, you're not living a hand-to-mouth existence. So suppose if tomorrow the EMI goes up, there is enough money in the bank to take care of the hike of EMIs on a month-to-month basis.
Sure, that's definitely something we need to look at. Also, can banks add other charges and or decide the premium over and above this repo rate?
Yes, so we discussed that in the last question.
Okay.
There is a repo rate.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, obviously, banks cannot charge you exactly what the repo rate is. They would obviously want to charge you a little bit extra.
Okay.
There will be their own spread.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is a little above. Suppose if the repo rate is, let's say, 5%. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they could add a 50 basis points thing. So 5.5% would be their own rate. Plus they can add a credit score premium.
Okay.
So obviously your behavior, your credit behavior will be of paramount importance going forward, especially if you're taking a loan from a bank.
Okay.
So if you have a good behavior, then it will be rewarded by a small premium.
Okay.
But if you have a bad credit history, then the premium would be high, because the banks would obviously try to sort of de-risk themselves by giving money to, let's say, a borrower with a bad credit history, as opposed to a borrower with a good credit history. So these are some of the charges that the banks would add over and above to the repo rate to arrive at their own. Then obviously there is a, it also depends upon how much loan you're taking. Are you taking a 20 lakh loan? Are you taking an 80 lakh loan? You know, so every different banks have different grades.
Okay.
So depending on that, so higher the amount, higher will be the spread, or higher will be the credit score premium.
Okay.
Some banks have these low charges if your loan amount is a little low.
Okay. And how should customers prepare for this?
First and foremost, should have a good credit history.
Okay.
Going forward, a credit history is very, very important.
Yeah.
So pay your bills on time. Don't have too many credit cards. Okay. Even if you have a credit card, don't overspend.
Okay.
Pay your bills on time. Don't default on your cards. Don't default on your electricity bills, telephone bills, because everything gets monitored and everything gets recorded in your credit score. Okay, so higher the credit score, the better. The lower the credit score, the worse you are.
Yeah.
Okay, and your ability to borrow money, not just at a good rate, but your ability to borrow a larger sum of money in case of, let's say, buying a home loan, also diminishes if your credit score is bad.
Bad.
Definitely. So you have to be very, very careful on how you spend your money. You can spend your money, but don't overspend and pay your bills on time. That's very, very important.
And it needs to be planned
well. It needs to be planned a little bit. Like some people, you know, pay the minimum amount every month on month in your credit cards. Okay. And then they carry forward the balance. So that also affects your credit score.
Okay.
Then if you take too many loans, that also affects your credit score. So be very judicious before you take any loan. Don't just apply for any loan just because it's being offered to you.
Okay.
Do you really need the money? Ask yourself that and then go for a loan.
And Keza, moving forward, we also heard a lot of news about rising frauds while using UPI payments.
We actually came to know about a few instances, Keetana, earlier this year.
Okay.
When, and there was a very prolific case that happened on Twitter. We actually got in touch with the person who was victim to that fraud. And we featured her in one of our stories.
Okay.
And moneycontrol.com. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that she was trying to sell something on OLX.
Okay.
And somebody showed interest. And he called up this lady and he said that I'm sending you a payment, so just approve it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But actually what he sent to her was not the payment, was not the money. He actually sent her kind of command in the UPI app, wherein if the user would press that, money would actually go out from that lady's account to that person's account.
Okay.
Okay. So you need to be very careful, because a lot many people used to use this loophole in UPI apps
to
instead of to hoodwink people mm-hmm. into giving them money. Okay. So, you know, there is a send money option and there is a receive money option. Mm-hmm. Okay. But make sure that you are receiving money and you're not pressing money on send money.
Okay.
So, and also, you know, when you are paying money to someone, you need to put in a PIN. Mm-hmm. When you're receiving money, you don't need to put in a PIN. Okay, so some people also got fooled by this saying that, you know, oh, I have to put in a PIN to receive the money. And as soon as they hit the PIN, money used to actually go out of their bank accounts rather than coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So we came to know about quite a few of these UPI frauds that happened.
Okay.
And hopefully with better awareness, people will be a little bit more careful going ahead.
Wow, that sounds really scary.
Yeah,
but has RBI come up with any redressal mechanism for this?
So yeah, RBI earlier in the year had set up a digital ombudsman
okay.
to resolve queries or concerns or complaints arising from customers from mm-hmm. using the UPI apps, the payment wallets and all of that. A little later in the year, RBI also told all these UPI wallets, fintech companies who are into payments and all,
yeah.
to set up an internal ombudsman.
Okay.
Okay. So what is an internal ombudsman? It is the first level of mechanism redressal.
Okay.
Redressal mechanism where you go to mm-hmm. and file a complaint. That is monitored, managed and owned by individual wallet companies and UPIs. Okay.
Okay.
If you are not satisfied with the response that they give you, then you escalate the matter to what is called as an RBI ombudsman. The RBI had already set up earlier mm-hmm. this year. Okay. So earlier what used to happen was that only banking system had the ombudsman.
Mm-hmm.
So banks, suppose, let's say if you have a problem with the bank, then you have to go to a particular that bank only. And there is an ombudsman officer or there is a redressal mechanism within the bank. So they will take some time to look into your complaint. They will get back to you. And then if you were still not satisfied with the bank's response, you could go to the RBI.
Mm-hmm.
The similar channel has to be there even for digital wallets, right? Because digital wallets don't have any bank branch or something like that.
Yeah.
So suppose if you have a query with Paytm, where do you go? Where is the Paytm's office? Similarly, several other UPI, Beam UPI, suppose, or Google Pay. Where is Google Pay's office? So
Okay. There
needs to be a proper process that needs to be there and a listed process which is mm-hmm. transparent that can be put up on a website
okay.
and what everybody like you and me can know what to do. So that process was set up this year.
Okay. Has there been any reports on how the system has been going on?
See, so far we haven't had any reports. We haven't seen any instances as such.
Okay.
We're still in the same year, 2019, when this thing has started, right?
Yeah.
So digital ombudsman has started at RBI's level, but internal ombudsman, RBI has already told all the bank, all the UPI wallets, UPIs and
right.
the payment wallets of the world in India to have an internal ombudsman.
Okay.
So they are in the process of setting up their internal ombudsman, but hopefully they should be able to put in place some mechanism, transparent mechanism for consumers to sort of address their grievances or get their grievances addressed.
Okay. Speaking about fraud, Kezad,
yeah.
let's talk about the PMC crisis.
That's the biggest pain.
Yeah, definitely.
This year for
I mean, there were so many customers who
so
were
many
affected
correct.
By this, and
correct.
There were some deaths as well that
yeah.
we saw. Will they ever get their money back?
So the government has intervened, RBI has intervened, and
mm-hmm.
this has become a big issue.
Okay.
Obviously, it is in everyone's interest that they get the money back.
Yeah.
How soon they will get the money back is a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whose answers we don't know.
Yeah.
But definitely the government seems to be involved in ensuring that customers, depositors get their money back from PMC. Because look at the amount of protests you said. You also reminded that, you know, some people also passed away in
yeah.
shock. They couldn't get their money for the timely treatment.
Yeah.
So it has definitely snowballed into a huge, huge crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank's name may have been very innocuous when it first came out.
Yeah.
But look at the number of depositors whose money was stuck in PMC. I mean, we've known in our office, right, Kirtana, that there are a couple of people whose parents had invested all their savings and all their pension money, everything in just this one bank, at just one branch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that, you know, the amount of harassment or rather inconvenience that these people would be facing right now as
yeah.
we speak. Initially, they said that withdrawal limit was 1,000 rupees,
mm-hmm.
but everything else was locked. Then
okay.
the withdrawal was raised to 10,000. Then RBI and the governor came and raised it to 20,000. Then it got raised to 40,000. And now the latest limit of withdrawal is 50,000. So
mm-hmm.
if you have your money lying in PMC bank, you can withdraw up to 50,000, no questions asked.
Okay.
If you have for any other emergencies, 1 lakh rupees is also allowed. Like, for example, medical, or if you need it for your wedding expenses.
Yeah.
So 1 lakh is also allowed to for you to withdraw.
Okay.
So that was what happened with PMC. And yeah, I mean, you know, in future, you need to be very careful about how you sort of approach your bank, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you remember what we spoke about last, debt funds were thought to be very safe.
Yeah.
Banks were thought to be very safe. Okay.
Yeah.
So all your traditional notions of what were safe, what was safe and what wasn't, many of those notions are now getting challenged. PMC Bank, like any bank, for instance,
right.
you would always feel that bank is your first friend
mm-hmm.
where you put your money. Okay, that's your graduation from piggy bank to a savings
definitely.
Bank. But you need to be careful about how you select your bank also. Don't put all your account in just one bank. That's number one. Number two, don't just go blindly for any bank which is there just because it is there in your locality
right.
and it is in your building on the ground floor. It is right in your neighborhood. So I will go in that bank and put my money in it. So be very careful when you put your money in, let's say, cooperative banks and, you know, all small banks. Stick to large banks. Have at least, you know, two accounts, have three accounts. At
okay.
the most, you don't need to have many accounts.
Right.
But have two or three accounts and spread your deposits between them.
That's right, Kezad. But there's also this other thing that I heard about PMC from our experts in money control. And they told me that PMC had actually, they were known for their good service and they were even open.
Yeah.
One of the banks that was open on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So what kind of a criteria do you use to, you know, assess these banks before you open an account?
So one is that obviously, you know, you need to be aligned to the big banks.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, as I said, you should have two or three banking. God forbid, even if one goes bust, at
mm-hmm.
least not all your money is locked. Okay.
Okay.
So don't go just by, you know, how the banking people will treat you. Obviously, in PMC, even I've also heard many of the depositors used to always rave about the kind of personalized services that
right.
these banks used to give.
Mm-hmm.
But avoid cooperative societies. For sure.
Okay.
Avoid cooperative banks,
mm-hmm.
okay, as far as possible. Stick to commercialized banks or stick to private sector banks
mm-hmm.
where, you know, the service is there. Also, of course, I'm not just talking about the service,
yeah.
but I'm talking about the coverage of the bank, how many branches are there. It has to be a big national level bank. It can't
okay.
be just a very localized bank which is there only in your city or your state.
Mm-hmm.
So that tomorrow, suppose, let's say if you're going, you're traveling, you need to know where the ATM of the bank is.
Okay.
Okay. So, branch network is.
Yeah.
So, all those things you have to keep in mind. You would never know which bank can go bust.
Yeah,
okay?
Definitely.
But stick to good names.
Yeah.
That's what at least we can do.
Okay. Thank you so much for these insights, Kezad.
My pleasure, Kirtana.
With that, we come to the end of this Simply Save episode. If you have any queries or questions that you'd like to ask Kezad, please write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, that's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.